And now, The Low Post.
Welcome to The Low Post Podcast, live from an undisclosed hotel room in Charlotte, North Carolina, where Kemba Walker scored a million points again last night. And I'm thrilled to be joined by my old friend, former colleague, I guess still colleague, and current, I'm just going to call you the Al Roker of the NBC Regional Sports Network NBA coverage. Tom Haberstroh, how you doing?
It's better than Matt Lauer, I think, right now.
There's no question about that. Unless it's possible Al Roker has done something bad and I'm not aware.
Yeah, I don't know about it.
I've lost track, honestly.
Maybe the Hoda Kotb of NBC Sports NBA. Like, I guess
She's with Kathy Lee.
Yeah, but she's also, I think she's on the Today Show now. I only know this because my wife like religiously watches the Today Show.
So, is Kathy Lee not on the Today Show? Is that a different show?
So the Today Show has like three different additions to it from what I gather.
Okay.
And she is on like the drunk hour where they just drink wine, which I can get on board with.
Like
the idea of just like having a TV show that, hey, screw the whole, conformity of network television. Let's just drink wine from like huge, those giant wine glasses that have.
So
like
when they're mocking that on SNL, that's actually accurate.
Yeah, that's 100%. And
the size of the glass is accurate.
Yeah. So
when they're, I feel like when they're mocking that on SNL, that's Kristen Wiig era. So that's like not happening anymore. That shows you how much I stay up late to watch SNL anymore.
Kristen Wiig is spot on Kathy Lee.
Kathy Lee.
And it is not an exaggeration. The goblet, the giant like bowl of wine. So, yes, NBC Sports is, has seven different regionals. As you know, they have a bunch of channels that broadcast NBA games, and that what they wanted was a national guy. Unbeknownst to me, like as of like a couple months ago when this came onto my table, I was like, oh, this makes a lot of sense. As you know, when you cover a team for 82 games, you kind of become this bubble, this echo chamber of like the same thoughts. If Boston, you know, they're known for their homerism, Tommy points and all that, but they do want an outside perspective to kind of put them in their place and like say, no, the Celtics are having really big issues and teams around the league are.
The refs are not screwing the Boston Celtics in every single game.
Exactly. So I do that for the Wizards,
I like how you said Wizards and you just immediately couldn't think of any other team.
I can't. It's just infected my brain. The Wizards, Sixers, Celtics, Bulls, Blazers, and Warriors Kings. So it's a nice group.
Who do you think is the Wizards player, most likely to have said nothing during this apparent practice where like every single person on the team yelled at each other?
You know what's weird is that like Dwight isn't even a part of this.
The injured glute, is keeping him, keeping him on the sidelines. You're right.
Of all the names.
He's done what they've asked him to do. He actually hasn't posted up 9,000 times.
Yeah.
He's rebounded. He's done what they have asked him to do.
And talking to people with the Wizards, they're like, Dwight has been great for us so far. And of all the names in that whole scuffle, his name doesn't appear once. And this is early. This is November. We're going to get there when Dwight Howard blows it up somehow.
I think the answer has to be Yan Mahinmi. When you're on that contract, you just can't say anything.
No.
If people are abusing you, you just have to take it. And you cannot tell anyone else on the team. I think it has to be like Thomas Bryant should speak up in that meeting before.
Yeah.
It's not even a meeting. It's just people yelling at each other.
Yan is like, you know what? I can't yell at Ern. I can't, Grunfeld, you know what? Thank you. Can't begrudge you for that contract. So yeah, it was nuts. Like we were at the game last night, the Celtics Hornets game, and it blew up like boom, boom, boom. Every reporter was like, left one detail out. And then when another reporter like filled in that detail, then the other reporter like jumped on that and was like, I'll add another layer. And it just kept going.
I like how Candace Buckner's string of tweets was awesome because she kept getting these details. And it wasn't clear to her at first. This is the fear actually of like real time tweeting is that like there's too many people. You can't piece it all together like 100% accurately. And then she realized like four tweets in, wait, they're all talking about the same practice. All happened at one practice. Like initially it sounded like, well, this happened on one day and that happened. No, it's all just, they just had a whole practice where they yelled at each other, which I like that the Minnesota thing has made this a thing now. Now we're going to hear about every time a team has a practice like this, it's going to get out because the Minnesota thing happened and the internet loved it. And now it's going to get out now every time.
So what was the I think Beal said, I've been living this for 7 years, was it?
To earn Egronfeld, apparently.
But then I read that Candace's report that it is to the effect of this message. Like, Bradley Beal said something to the effect of, I've been doing this for 7 years. And then I remember that Chris Haynes with the Draymond Green KD report, it was, I don't know if this is the exact quote, but to the effect of, leave, we don't need you, we won without you. And then when the Jimmy Butler stuff came out, it was a lot of like paraphrasing, this is what he said.
This is the Bob Woodward thing where it's like, does it matter?
No,
if
no.
If you get the exact wording, as long as the tone and the theme is correct. All right, so let's talk about the Wizards. I don't want to spend that much time about the Wizards because they're just a flaming pile of garbage. But there are other teams with like real issues that are actually good that we can talk about. But Woj reported yesterday that everyone's available. I think that's true. I think what they're asking for Beal, from what I've heard, makes him functionally not available, but maybe some team throws the Brinks truck or their price comes down. The fact that they're soliciting opinions is interesting. I actually spent the little time I had to prep for this part of the podcast, I spent looking at Beal trades because auto trades are kind of interesting, but I feel like we know what the price will be on that, like a middling to bad first round pick and like something to fill the salary. Wall, to me, like, it's not even interesting. It's just not interesting to me. Now, you could argue that maybe one of these teams will panic and I've seen Miami mentioned. I've seen Memphis is 11-5. We're going to talk about them. Hopefully, like, they're not upsetting the apple cart. That's been mentioned. I don't think, like, I've seen Detroit since they did the Blake Griffin one. Maybe they'll do this one. Like, don't see it. So I spent time looking at Beal trades. What did you spend time on? What's your most interesting takeaway from this?
Well, I think you wrote about it. The trade kicker for John Wall right now is at $21 million that the Wizards would have to eat if they traded John Wall today. And next year, what you wrote is 100% accurate, which is, this is kind of a weird, like, CBA quirk that the trade kicker would be 15% this year of his remaining contract, which is a huge number.
It's a lot of money.
It's $20 million that they would have to pay just to get rid of him, okay? But that number basically goes down to zero next year because of the weird CBA quirk that you can't have a trade kicker go above the max. Because he's at the max next year, basically his trade kicker effectively goes down to zero.
So the basic simple reality of that is, in real terms, John Wall is untradeable from the Wizards' perspective.
Yes.
They have to pay that money until July 1st, and on July 1st, he becomes tradable.
So all these trade proposals with John Wall's name in it, I think you just kick the can down the road till next year.
And by the way, I discovered that almost by accident, and I will say the league and the union at the absolute highest levels are a little bit hesitant to weigh in on the final answer of that because it's never happened before with this specific kind of trade kicker, and like no one, it kind of snuck up on people. I don't know. Do you see a John Wall team? I've said before, I think Phoenix is the only one. I think Phoenix is the only one with an owner who is meddling and crazy enough to be like, John Wall, he's made all-star teams.
Yeah.
Like, let's get him on our team. We have no point guard. Like, literally last night against the Sixers, we just gave up and started Devin Booker at point guard, which is, Devin Booker's good. That's fine. I
don't see one for John Wall. But Bradley Beal, you can probably put him just about everywhere, but I don't see a good fit from the Wizards standpoint of why would they move Bradley Beal. I think the guy who's I'm actually looking at is Otto Porter.
Yeah, he's the middle ground.
He's the middle ground where they can retain Bradley Beal. And I think if I'm Ernie Grunfeld, I'm looking at this, and who knows if Ernie Grunfeld's going to have a job, you know, tomorrow or by the time this posts.
I believe he drafted Wes Unseld.
Is it that far back?
I
could be.
It seems like it.
So he, I feel like Brad Beal, is the tentpole going forward. And I think this time next year, I'm not so sure John Wall will be there. If there's going to be a move with John Wall's name, I think it's going to be in the offseason. And then Otto Porter, I feel like they're all talking around Otto Porter. Like when Brad Beal is talking about intensity and how people need to stop complaining about touches, and he's doing that very vocally after games, I feel like he's talking about Otto Porter, but not actually putting the name.
Yeah, Otto's been a pouty presence at times. I remember there was a thing in the playoffs, even in the Toronto series, where he was injured a little bit during that series, but I think there was talk in that of like, we need more from him. I don't, like, we can go through Bradley Beal fake trades if you want, but I'm with you. Like, I don't really get what that accomplishes for me as the Washington Wizards. Like, it just leaves me with a worse team and a bad salary situation and, like, maybe some stuff that I get back from Beal, I guess. Like, trading Wall, they should try to do it.
So give me a couple that you outlined. No.
Well, Kevin O'Connor had should New Orleans go get Wall? And I think that's the right idea because you just have to find a team that's like desperate and crazy. Now, he put out a price like, should they give up two or three lightly protected picks, which they should not do that in a million years. They should give up one at most.
Yeah.
And the league, like any lightly or unprotected New Orleans pick after this coming draft is a really good trade chip until we know what Anthony Davis does. Cause then you could be getting an unprotected New Orleans 2021 pick could literally be the number three pick in the draft. You just don't know.
Right. And then Miami's another one where they might be desperate enough with Pat Riley, being like, I want that guy. I want a franchise star. But didn't they kind of do that, Zach, with Goran Dragic? Like, wouldn't it be just redoing the Dragic trade where you're boxing yourself in with an aging point guard with knee issues?
And I was going to say, I don't know who wants any of these Miami contracts, but the team that would want a Miami contract is the team trying to get off John Wall's contract.
I know.
And so I guess I look at that and I'm like, all right, so I have John Wall and then I still have a bunch of expensive players that, you know, half of my players already are ball handlers. Like we're overloaded with ball. I don't love a fit there. Back to New Orleans, I get the clutch sports connection there is why you would do it. If the only way you do that deal is if Anthony Davis comes to you and says, I will stay if you get John Wall. Not, I might stay. Not, oh, this is interesting. It helps our team. Like, John seems like he's pretty fast. Like, yeah. Might throw some lobs to me. Like, not any of that. It's like, wink, wink, I'm staying because you got my guy or another one of my agent's guys in here. That's it. That's the only way they should do it.
Is that John Calipari's music?
Oh God, don't bring him in. I thought I do think we've all sort of like put Minnesota over here. Like they just did their thing. Like we'll see how Saric and Covington fit. I actually think they're an interesting candidate and they've got to figure out Tibbs, and it seems likely that Tibbs is not going to be making decisions in July and August of this year. Mm-hmm. Teague, I think, has a player option. He's not the answer there long term. I just think they're an interesting candidate for like, can we move out Wiggins' salary and take in another big salary that maybe isn't super desirable but is attached to a big name? I just think they're an interesting
with
candidate.
With Wall or with?
Wall.
Yeah.
Wall.
I mean,
Beal, you fit anywhere. As you said, Beal is like one of the more portable players in the whole league.
With Wall going to Minnesota, I wonder if the Wizards already have a glut of wings, like 3-and-D wings. I don't know if Andrew Wiggins, he's not defense, but I just don't know if he fills that sort of role for them.
It's true. And you have to imagine Oubre is elsewhere next year because they can't pay him.
Yeah.
His 3-point shooting has regressed horribly since a hot start last year.
How about this one? Otto Porter to New Orleans for, I think it was, Solomon Hills, he's expiring, right?
No, he has 1 year left.
1 year left?
This, yeah. On another disastrous 2016 contract.
So you get off money sooner with that. To make the money match, I think you need like Etuan Moore.
That gets you to 21.
One more. Who would be the third piece there?
That's the problem. I don't know if you necessarily you don't necessarily need it to match. It's just a matter of like, you know, the Wizards are over the tax and New Orleans isn't – well, New Orleans is actually comfortably under
I think
it.
Otto makes a lot of sense for them if they want a 3-and-D guy. Etuan's a great shooter, but I think for them it's kind of a message to AD that we want to retain you and we're willing to get a guy, Otto Porter, who probably a lot of GMs in the league think – before this season had all-star ceiling potential. So I think the Wizards stuff is amazing material to laugh at. I don't know what they do in the near term. I think just this summer is when it all comes falling apart.
Listen up, people. We have a big favor to ask. We promise it won't take up too much of your time. You know, I care about your time. You know, our show is supported by some fantastic sponsors, right? Well, we would love to hear your feedback. Head to podcastlisteners.com and fill out a short anonymous survey. And that's all that we will ask. We swear again, that's podcastlisteners.com.
Trades.com. Thank you.
It does seem like we just went through New Orleans and literally named trades for all three of the Wizards high price players. It does seem like with the pressure bearing down on them. And look, New Orleans fans don't want to hear this. They don't want to hear that the clock is ticking. Like, I'm sorry that the clock is ticking. I'm sorry that they can offer him the Supermax this summer and he's going to say yes or no. And if he says no, and I would bet money on him saying no, then the clock has ticked.
Yeah.
The ticking is done. It's just there. The moment
the alarm
is there.
Is going off on
I'm
the
sorry.
Old fashioned clock.
Yes. I'm sorry that this is a real thing. I'm sorry that the Celtics and Lakers are literally like in line holding tickets like I was for Batman on opening night in 1990, like in line, just waiting. Like I'm already here.
Were you in a Batman costume?
No.
Come on. Man.
The movie's not starting in 3 hours, but I'm here. Like I'm sorry that that's a thing. Here are my favorite. Let's go through rapid fire Bradley Beal trade teams just for fun. Just because I couldn't resist. It's stupid, but I couldn't resist.
Go.
New Orleans, for obvious reasons. And I think you need to, I think the Wizards would ask for two picks and New Orleans would cap it at one in addition to the money that you talked about. Mm-hmm. And, I think the Wizards might even like we want Mirotić instead of Solomon Hill for that $12 million salary slot. So that math is tough. The other most sensible, obvious deal on the whole market is after December 15th or January 15th, whenever he's tradable, is Brandon Ingram, KCP, Lance Stevenson, and a pick for Brad Beal. That's like makes so much sense.
Yep.
And I've been an Ingram optimist. This season has chipped away at my Ingram optimism.
Yep. You're on the lifeboat off of Ingram Island.
We don't even have it. It's Ingram
There's
Inlet.
A raft.
I think you need to go for alliteration. Ingram Inlet. What, an inlet is a body of
Ingram
water.
Ingram Isle? Right? I mean, isn't that alliteration?
Island.
I mean.
Yeah, Ingram, you're right. Ingram Island. I just feel like we can't have too many islands.
The Ingram Archipelago?
And it's a very populous place. So it's a big, but I mean, Beal is still pretty young and he fits like a glove there. I just think that one's a no brainer.
I don't like the fit with Ingram and LeBron in general. When Ingram is the primary ball handler, he is a lot more special than when he's playing alongside LeBron. And I think in Washington, it'd be the same problem, is that he would have to be off the ball with John Wall pounding the rock. So wherever Ingram goes, George Sedano and I talked about this on his radio show, is like, I think he should be brought off the bench a la what, Gordon Hayward did last night.
That was interesting.
Do we want to just go right into it?
No.
Go.
I tried to get Brad Beal to Denver. Couldn't find a good deal. Gary Harris and finding the filler is hard.
Yep.
Markel Fultz, Wilson Chandler, and the Heat's unprotected 2021 pick.
Woo! Now, so the Wizards were in on the Jimmy Butler talks.
Yes.
And they were in on... They're basically in on every talk, and I know every GM or, you know, front office person says, oh, we were in that deal, like we were trying to get that guy. But the Wizards are active. It's not like they're just sitting on their ass, on their Dwight Howard buttocks, and just saying, we're gonna step aside from this talk. Like, they're active. That's an interesting one, the Fultz deal.
Well,
I just think he needs to get out of field.
He played 7 minutes last night. They played McConnell over him in the second half.
I mean, this is where it's going. I mean, they went from starting and we're all behind him as a starter to now he's going to come off the bench to maybe just garbage time at this point.
The problem, to the degree that there's a problem, is that I think Philly to me has looked offensively better than the instant fit of Butler, Simmons, and Embiid has been better than expected on offense to me. You throw a fourth guy in there, as fittable as he is, and you do come into like, now there are diminishing returns to having all these guys on the same team. However, I think we exaggerate those diminishing returns sometimes. Like, those are four awesome players.
Yes.
The problem becomes when Simmons gets his max, I just don't know that you can carry four guys making $110 million together.
If they're not like the Warriors where you know they fit seamlessly.
It's the kind of trade you do to win the championship this year or next year, which is maybe you should do that. Like, maybe that's.
Of all the trades you brought up, that one's the most interesting to me.
I tried to build Boston trades, once Smart becomes tradable at 11, because something's wrong with Boston and we can talk about that. I couldn't find anything that would appeal without putting Jaylen Brown and Marcus Smart in, and that is going to be too much for Boston.
So we're kind of dancing around the main issue in Wizards I don't even know the hill there is that they don't play any defense. They're 29th in defense. Basically, do we count the Cavs at this point? They went zone last night for a while, and John Schumann posted a great video of them just the most tire fire zone defense I have seen. Just guys don't know what they're doing. And they're, so I looked this up, Zach. They were 14th in February last year, 14th in defensive rating for the month of February last year. Then they went 19th for the next month. Then they went 23rd for the next month. Then 25th, 28th, and now they're like almost dead last year. It's been a slow erosion of, we don't care anymore. We're not playing any defense.
It's bad. I don't want to talk about the Wizards anymore. I'm done with the Wizards. Win some basketball games.
Yeah.
Or make a trade.
Or keep coming out with these leaks.
Or have a fist fight.
Yeah. It's fun.
So we discussed four or five, interesting, problematic, confusing teams that we might want to hit today. I will, let you dictate where we go. So Tom Haberstroh, pick one of the teams we talked about and we'll go.
I'm Al Roker. Al Roker goes with Boston. Let's talk about Boston. The weather is stormy in Boston, Zach.
It was not a happy locker room last night before or after the game. I think the decision to bring Hayward off the bench caught some people by surprise and confused some people. And then you just got to give Kemba Walker credit. The guy's absolutely insane. He detonated in the fourth quarter, and they came back to win that game.
The actual move to remove him from the starting lineup, those sheets that media people still get in 2018 of like the starting lineups for each team with the signature of the head coach, which seems like something we should probably get rid of, because last night they had Gordon Hayward's name in the starting lineup. And I was saying to myself, like, I'm doing a big number on Gordon Hayward, and part of it is they probably should remove him from the starting lineup. And oh, they're going to keep him in the starting lineup today. And then I see all the tweets saying, no, actually he was removed. And so this was a late scratch. Like, either Brad Stevens was doing some sort of gamesmanship of, you know, hiding his chess moves right before tip in a November game. I don't know. But there was weird messaging right before the game of whether Gordon Hayward would actually start.
I think it was chess match. I think they knew a couple hours before the game. Give us a little, I don't want you to give away the big number, but give us a little insight into what is the big number about and why are you pro bringing Gordon Hayward off the bench?
Well, right now he's not the same player that he was in Utah. I mean, it's hard to watch sometimes. Last night coming out of the, he's asking for a pick and roll every single time because he can't get around guys without, you know, a screen.
He's asking for a pick and roll when he has mismatches, when he has either Kemba Walker or a big guy on him after a switch. He's still asking for a pick.
Still. I don't know if it's a comfort thing of just, you know, to bring up that space so that he has an easier route to the rim. But he is looking to pass every single time. He is not looking to attack. He has three dunks this year. And when I brought that up to Scal before the game, he was like, he has three? I don't remember any. Last year, he averaged one a game. Not last year, but in Utah, he averaged one a game. This year, he has three in 16 games. He is not looking to attack off the dribble. He is looking to spray to shooters, and it just seems like he's looking in a completely facilitator mode. He's not shooting well from three, and I looked up, like, who are the closest comps for what he is right now, coming back from an injury. What are statistically his closest comps? And one name that popped up that was like, was Evan Turner. So Evan Turner in Boston, during his final season in Boston, coming off the bench, had almost identical stats. Identical when you adjust for pace and per 100 possessions. His PER is the same exact thing. It's all Evan Turner. And it makes a lot of sense now that you see him coming off the bench is fulfilling that role of Evan Turner just being like the ball handler, playmaker. He's not shooting well. And so at first I was like, man, that's kind of harsh of Evan Turner. But then I was like, I mean, right now, that's who he is. I mean, he is a facilitator, non-attacker. He's going to find shooters, and he's not comfortable from deep right now. So it just makes a lot of sense that Gordon Hayward in this stage, he's going to get better, I think. But in this stage where he's not attacking the rim and he's looking to find shooters, and I just don't think he's confident getting into the rim for obvious reasons. But right now, he is very much Evan Turner.
Well, it's interesting because one of the reasons he was supposed to be so valuable to them was, you know, the Celtics were terrible last year when Horford and Irving sat together. And, you know, you would avoid doing that at all in the playoffs, although they still did it a little bit. and Hayward was going to be the guy who can facilitate, yeah, you know, when that happens. So my thing is, they're playing those guys. They're on the bench together a ton this year. 219 minutes already with Horford and Kyrie both on the bench, and their offense stinks, but their defense is awesome. So they're winning those minutes actually kind of handily. I just still think you can start Hayward and obviously do that. It's not that hard. You take him out after four or five minutes. It's like, it's interesting how much they've moved away from playing Baines and Horford together. Baines was the starter last night. They've played 21 minutes together all season, including last night.
They played almost
900. Yeah, and Baines couldn't stay on the floor.
Yeah.
I don't think that's the solution. One thing I do like about Baines is he will at least bang around the basket.
Yes.
And the Celtics for the second year in a row do not get to the basket, do not get free throws, do not get offensive rebounds. And Hayward's, it's like a rotating series of drive, kick, drive, kick, drive, kick, drive, kick. And only recently has Tatum begun driving to try and score or get to the line. Yeah. I thought Jaylen Brown, I was actually surprised they didn't bring him back in the game last night. He had three or four really good takes that made me think, well, that's what they need. But this is the second year in a row where they just don't get to the basket, and everyone who gets within 10 feet of the rim looks kind of skittish and kicks the ball out. And I just don't get why this is the case. I get that Kyrie Irving has never been a big free throw guy. He's an artist. He wants to dodge you in the air and spin the ball off the glass and all that. I just don't get why they – part of it is that Horford never rolls. And I think he should roll more.
Yep.
Because he's great at catching and kicking out. I also think some of these big guys catch – when you catch the ball within 3 feet of the rim, where you just – damn go up and dunk it or try, like all these big guys are in love with these kickout passes.
I know.
You're at the rim and the guy rotating to help on you is 6 inches shorter than you. Will you just dunk?
I was at the Milwaukee game where they shot like 63 pointers. The Celtics shot like 63
pointers. They won that game, right?
Yeah, it was an amazing game. And every time they had an opportunity, remember that, what was it, 2015 finals or 2016 when Andrew Bogut had a wide open alley-oop, like, dunk, and he just kicked it out to a shooter.
Yeah.
And it was like, that was like a very pivotal moment in the NBA, I feel like, where now it's not so much we want to get that 2 points. We want to go for the three. And I feel like we're seeing that with the Celtics, which is they want to kick out every single time. And Gordon Hayward, I feel like if he's not confident enough to attack the rim and go up and dunk it or at least try to get to the free throw line, that's a big problem for them because they need that in the worst way.
I also, if you watch where they – last night was they played Portland, I think, about a week ago, and then last night they played Charlotte. And both of those games are interesting contrasts in that Portland and Charlotte have elite pull-up three-point shooting guards. Yeah. And they leverage that by having their big guys set screens like 30 feet from the rim. So if that screen hits, you just walk into a pull-up three. Horford's screens are like 1 foot – inside the arc, 1 foot outside the arc. Like Kyrie goes around that screen, he's already taking a 22-footer. Yeah. There's something off with their team. I'm not worried about it because they still have the number one defense in the league, but their offense should
be so much better.
It's just fundamentally not working in the way that it should.
Yeah. And Brad Stevens said last night in the scrum was like, the changes and the tweaks to the lineups are not over. Like they're going to keep searching.
Well, they remember it was a week or two ago, maybe in Denver, in one game they brought Tatum off the bench in the second half, which was a clear message to him, like, stop pulling up from 18 feet every single time. Keep going and do something better than that. And someone said something to him because he is trying to do something better than that. Before the season in my crazy predictions column, until about a week before, I was going to pick Boston to have the best record in the league because I just thought this team had a chance to be special. And watching them in the preseason and talking to Hayward about how much the second surgery he had in May, which they did not expect was going to happen,
no,
set him back. I walked that back because I normally don't really care about preseason, but there's always one or two teams where you watch them and you're like, something's not right, or something's super right. Like when Golden State first year under Kerr came out in the preseason, like, yeah, oh my God.
Well, okay. Brad Stevens is very much aware of that the offense is a wreck. And he's not denying it. He's not saying, hey, you know, the 3-point percentage is going to improve or like small sample size. He's very much as Brad Stevens can be sounding off the alarms about the offense.
One of the most incredible stats of the whole season to me so far. Now we're not even 20 games in. Everyone, including me, maybe more me than almost anyone outside of Boston, was so excited to see how this starting lineup would work.
And it's
with
bad.
These five star players,
yep.
or whatever you want to call them.
Yeah.
Their offensive rating, do you want to take a guess what it is?
The starting lineup, yeah. I think, is 91.
90.8. That is, you and I might be able to pick five of the 50 worst players in the NBA. And as long as they positionally made sense.
Yeah.
And play them 200 minutes and have a better offensive rating than that.
It's awful.
That's 10 points worse than the worst offensive team in the league. That is like, if you told me it was 100, I'd be like, yeah, it's, you know, that's an incredible number.
That's
a big number, Tom Haverstraw.
It is, and it might be in my big number coming out at NBCSports.com/Haverstraw.
Love it.
But you mentioned it, like, expectations coming in is that this would work seamlessly because these are all smart players, high IQ guys, but I think that almost works to a disadvantage. When you're so smart, you might be actually trying to make it work too much and it gets in your head. Like in Miami, that was a very much a thing of taking turns between Dwayne Wade and LeBron James and Chris Bosh. Like they were very much, not all on the same page because they didn't want to offend everybody when they're all star players.
By the way, breaking news from The Athletic. It's David Aldridge reporting. Markelle Fultz is going to see a shoulder specialist in New York within the next week. I'm sorry to laugh. It's just, I've always been suspicious by how real the shoulder injury actually is.
I am too. Yeah.
So I would love to attend that doctor's appointment.
Look, like the shoulder isn't going to make you pass the ball around. Like it's one of those, what were they? They were like, they're like those little bars, those like camp games that we had, the little sticks with the balancing, like flipping it back and forth. What were those? They were like nunchucks almost. Like,
yeah, I don't know what those were called.
What were those called, Zach? I don't know. In Connecticut, where we grew up, this was a very much a thing, but I can't remember what it was because I have a kid now, and so I don't remember things from 20 years
ago. Yeah, I'm 10% dumber than I was before having a kid. And if we have a second kid, I'll be like 20% dumber. And I just won't remember.
I feel like it's a multiplier effect when you got multiple kids. But the Markelle taking the free throws and passing it back and forth and flipping it up, I don't think that's a shoulder issue. I'm sorry. I get that they're trying to find some answer, mental or physical. But man, that is a mess. Like almost beating a dead horse like the Wizards where it's like, all right. Like, how much crazier can this story get? The Fultz shoulder injury, I don't think it can get any crazier.
Oh, it could. Tom Haverstraw, pick another team that we talked about.
Let's go with the Clippers.
I'm sure that all of us before the season would have predicted that almost 25% in the Western Conference would be a three-way tie at the top between Portland, Memphis, and the Los Angeles Clippers, which is the case today.
We're getting to the point of the season where we have to take this seriously. Like, it's no longer...
Oh, no. I'm not joking about it. And Memphis is on our list also of possible teams. And I wrote a giant feature on the Blazers today. So all these teams are in the wheelhouse. But I'm so glad you want to talk about the Clippers. I can't think of a worse team for the Wizards to be playing tonight. I believe they're playing the Clippers tonight because the Clippers just want to come and punch you in the mouth and just be physical and nasty and mean and exploit every little weakness you have. And the Wizards want no part of that. Now, having said that, the Wizards probably win by 15, but,
this is the NBA.
So what's interesting to you about the Clippers?
Well, it kind of, we talk a lot about the trades of, Zach LaVine going back to, and Markkanen, obviously he was a pick, but these superstar trades and how they've, you know, the team trading away the superstar is just lost the deal.
You mean the trading hasn't lost it as badly as we think, you mean?
Yeah, so yeah. I feel like a lot of the trade, like the Victor Oladipo,
right,
Paul
so
they, George.
The team trading away the superstars come away much better than anticipated.
Yes, and maybe that speaks to how bad the situation was just culturally and in the locker room before the superstar gets traded away. But the Bill Simmons Ewing theory is very strong in the last few trades that we've seen, whether it's Jimmy Butler, whether it's Paul George, Chris Paul, Blake Griffin,
Cousins.
And DeAndre Jordan, Cousins, another one, where the team that trades away the superstar isn't doing nearly as badly as we thought. And like Montrezl Harrell has been incredible for them.
He's the sixth man of the year and it's not even close. Well, maybe it's a little close with his own teammate, Lou Williams, but like that dude has been absolutely ridiculous.
You don't think Lawrence Frank and Steve Ballmer are looking at the standings and laughing at Dallas where they got the DeAndre Jordan, like that got DeAndre Jordan. They're laughing at Houston and they're looking at the Pistons where they're looking at all those teams and they're at the top and the other teams are not.
I also think they're looking at the standings saying, do we really want to do this? Is this really what we had in mind? Because if they make the playoffs, their pick goes to Boston. Due to one of 14 Jeff Green trades.
Yeah, what was that? The Jeff Green or Lance Stevenson? Like, what trade was that?
It's their acquisition of Jeff Green.
Here's Zach here to tee you up on Montrezl.
I love Montrezl Harrell. Montrezl Harrell may lead the whole league in appearances and 10 things I like and don't like over the last calendar year. And they're all likes. There's not one dislike.
Top five in PER in 2018-19 season.
I looked this up too. Say it.
Boban, Steph, Braun, Anthony Davis, and Harrell.
That's right. The Clippers have two of the top five PER players in the whole league coming off their bench.
And that's our big number. Yeah. Well, how about that? How about that?
So here's another Montrezl Harrell stat for you. Montrezl Harrell is averaging per 36 minutes 2.2 steals and 2.7 blocks. Here's the whole list of people who have done that for a season. Kim Hughes, I have no recollection of him doing that the year I was born. Nerlens Noel did it once.
Of course he did.
Bobby Jones did it twice. Gerald Wallace actually did it once.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
David Robinson did it once.
Mm-hmm.
One player did it four times. Who do you think it is?
Marion?
Nope. 2.2 steals per 36. 2.
Josh 7. Smith.
Nope. This is, you're going to kick yourself for even guessing these names.
Oh, no. Like Dennis Rodman?
Simmons named the stat Stocks after in inspired by this player. Steals plus blocks, Stocks.
Oh, AK-47? What?
Hakeem Olajuwon.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Did it four times. It's been done 10 total seasons for if you put a minutes threshold of like you actually played the season.
He's awesome, man.
And Trez, the shot blocks I didn't see coming. And that's been the big jump in his game this year is the rim protection and the defense for a guy who's only 6'8", I think. He's doing that better than anyone else on their team. He's not rebounding, and that's one of the big weaknesses they have. And just the way they're doing it is, like, I don't think you can look at their team and their rotation. So to me, that doesn't count Teodosic, who's a part-timer.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they have one, like, really even super above average passer in the whole rotation, and they're 25th in assist rate, but they just have a bunch of guys who like they just make the right play. They just make the right simple play, and if you put two or three or four of those together, it sort of acts like as if you had Chris Paul on your team.
Like the sum of the parts is greater than the whole. Yeah, like I think the thing about the Clippers is we probably underrate this because it's boring, but free throws, they have three guys.
Never stop getting to the foul line.
They have three guys who are relentless at getting the free throw line. And this is earth to CJ McCollum. Like, and they're an amazing free throw shooter. So like the thing about CJ is like, he's like one of the best free throw shooters of all time. Just get to the free, whatever you do, just get to the line because you're just going to be way more efficient. You're going to get more points per game and your team's going to be way better. I mean, when you look at Lou, Tobias Harris and Gallo, like these guys are awesome at getting to the free throw line and actually converting there. So they're getting very on the margins, a very efficient offense. And then in today's NBA where just the free throws and foul calls are way up this year, like they've figured this out. It's like, hey, this isn't Morey ball, obviously, but they're trying to get to the line a lot more because they have such good free throw shooters.
I do wonder if, their shot selection will come back to bite them at all. So they're third from the bottom in percentage of their shots that are threes. They take a lot of mid-range shots. One of the reasons that's not hurting them is they're shooting the hell out of both mid-range shots and they're shooting 51% on corner threes, which is so like the few they're getting, they're making half of them. And
Elfie Gallo, man, he's.
I'll tell you what else though. I mean, first of all, I'm glad you mentioned Gallo. I'm almost afraid to say it and I'm knocking on the giant wooden table in my hotel room.
I don't think it's wood, actually.
I'm really, well, whatever it is. I'm super happy for him. And I'm almost afraid to say it because he literally, like, just those words may tear his hamstring. Like, somehow the carrying over the wind will tear his hamstring. But, and it's, if you look at his career, he's rarely had seasons where he both got to the line at a super Gallo level and hit threes in the same season. And he's doing that now. And just, it's really nice to see because the guy's just, his body has betrayed him so many times. I just hope it stays. I hope it keeps going.
I mean, Tobias plus Lou plus.
And Tobias is good, man. That dude just made himself into a really good NBA player. He's really good player.
Traded three times. Mid-season.
I know. He's still only like 26 years old.
Yeah.
I think there's a real chance that, I mean, the Clippers would certainly renounce him to get two-star free agents. I don't believe they need to renounce him to get just one. They may just be like, we're cool having this guy be our second or third best player for a long time. Like, with him and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is going to be really good, and like star X, like we're cool with that. Like, if we don't get star B, star X and star B, I just named. If we don't get star B instead of star Y or whatever, like we're cool with Tobias Harris being that guy.
Let's hit Memphis.
Boy, oh boy. If there's a team I'm going to be wrong on, I'm happy it's Marc Gasol's team, because I did not see this coming. They're 11-5. They're the third best defense in the NBA and something like the 23rd best offense, which could raise a little bit of a warning flag. But I did not pick them to make the playoffs. I didn't see this coming. So what has surprised you?
Well, Jaren Jackson Jr. is amazing. He turned 19 a month ago. I feel like if he was in New York or if he was in LA, like there would be, calls for him every day on The Jump or SportsCenter to like feature this dude, because he's legit. He is awesome. They're super long. I mean, Kyle Anderson was one of those, weird signings this offseason. Was like, really? Like Kyle Anderson on that team?
Well, I'm glad you brought him up, and I'll let you get back to your point as soon as possible, but he's one of the reasons why I was pessimistic on them for this reason. His usage rate is super, super low.
12% or something.
Thought they just signed all these low usage guys like Temple, like these like seventh guys.
Yes.
Around two stars who are A, injured a lot in the last couple of years, and B, not like big shot takers themselves. Like, I just didn't see how they were going to get buckets. And like Kyle Anderson's usage rate dropped, and they're still winning. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, so that's big. That just their length. And Jaren Jackson Jr. He's huge. And then you have Marc Gasol. I think our guy Dan Vine tweeted out their wingspans and how like Garrett Temple for whatever reason doesn't have a wingspan out there, but you know he's got a ridiculous wingspan. It's just they play really smart defense. And as you said, as long as those two guys, Conley and Marc Gasol, are healthy, I think this team is going to win 50 games, but if they're healthy.
We might make another steak dinner bet on that. And our steak dinner bet last year, I think, should go down as a push, even though I technically won it. I didn't win it in the spirit.
Maybe you get a steak biscuit.
In spirit, you won.
Last year in the off season, I came on your podcast and we were discussing Gordon Hayward signing with Boston. And I said, I think they're going to like just grind defensively and have that identity of we're going to be the best defensive team.
Utah.
And so I said, they're going to be as good as they were with Gordon Hayward. They won 51 games. And then you said, Tom, that's ridiculous. Let's move that down to 48.5. Deal. And I said, deal. So 48.5. And of course it came down to the last game of the season. They lost. They won 48
games. You won
in
spirit because I didn't think they would. I thought they would win 43.
Yeah.
Or 42. So you won.
But I didn't see Donovan Mitchell happening. Like I did not. I was not saying that because Donovan.
But nobody did. You can't look at the 13th pick, no matter how enticing that guy is, and say, well, he's going to be the best or second best player on our team right away. And I think what's happened this year to him and Tatum is just an interesting reminder that it's hard for young players, even if they come out like gangbusters. It doesn't necessarily mean it's going to continue. Now, I think it will continue for Donovan Mitchell soon, but it's been a rough start for him, and that Utah was on our list. I don't want to get off Memphis though. So, Mark has gotten hot lately. He's up to 41% from three and 45 from the field. Conley has gotten up hot lately. He's up to 35%. He made 7 threes last night in their win over Dallas. But like they haven't gotten like outlier performances from those guys at all. No. They haven't gotten outlier performances from anyone other than Shelvin Mack. They're playing these like small lineups with Seldon at power forward because all their power forwards are injured. JaMychal Green has now played the last two games. Like it's not like you look at them and say something they're doing is unsustainable, except the turnover rate. Their forced turnover rate would be like the highest in the modern history of the league.
Right.
And reason they're playing good defense. Like,
then the length, and I'm like coming back to the length of like maybe that's something. Like maybe just they're so freaking long out there, and people don't think of them as like the Milwaukee Bucks length, but they're super long. And the other thing about the Grizzlies, I take the over on teams that were tanking the previous year, or at least very much like we can call it tanking, right? The Dallas Mavericks last year and the Memphis Grizzlies, I felt like we're not trying to win games last year. And so I feel like people were sleeping on them coming into this season. And so I took the over on both of those teams. Dallas.
What was the line on Memphis? Do you remember?
It's
got to be like mid to low 30s. It was not a high line.
It was not like, it was not playoffs. It was not that. So I was banging the over on both those teams simply because I think it was just they weren't trying to win close games. And I feel like the coaching, they can do a whole lot better putting up better lineups. And I think Dallas, you're seeing that now. DeAndre Jordan has to play better, and the chirping that Tim McMahon talked about, like, they are worse with him as a rebounding team. They are worse with DeAndre Jordan on the floor by far, with DeAndre Jordan on the floor than off. Like, that's kind of like the classic when box score stats don't tell you the full story. Like, look at the team rebounding numbers with DeAndre Jordan on and off the floor. At least like last week, it was crazy. So even though you added rebounder, if he's stealing rebounds from other people, doesn't make you any
better. He does not look – oh, well, DJ is – I mean, JJ Redick came on my podcast 5 years ago and mocked DeAndre Jordan stealing rebounds. So, and there was that famous one of Doncic already this year where he like almost elbowed Doncic in the head. Like, can you just let the rookie get a rebound? You got paid already.
Yeah.
You know, well, you kind of got paid 1 year, but you've got two big contracts. Just let someone else get a rebound. We all know you get a lot of rebounds. Like, you got a long track record. You don't need to keep injuring people to
steal. We know you're a good rebounder, bro.
Memphis, I mean, to your point, this is exactly what they talked about last year when their season spiraled out of control, and it didn't take long for that to happen. They said, you know, we're going to tank. We're cool with that. Like, if Mike can't come back, we're going to lose a lot of games. We're going to get a high pick, get everyone back healthy, and we're going to surprise people next year. And I think there was skepticism and still is about how healthy Mike and Mark would get.
Yes.
And how they would age, and people are still sort of waiting for one of those guys to go down for 15 games. And if that happens, like, we'll see what their record in those 15 games is. But give credit to the Grizzlies. Like, this is exactly what they said. And Jaren Jackson Jr., despite being, is he the youngest top 10 pick, or he's very young?
I think Wendell Carter Jr. is close.
I mean, it's funny. Either one of those guys would have just been the absolute classic Memphis Grizzlies pick. Just like, plug him in. He's ready to play defense and move the ball right now.
Yep.
And, you know, the shooting and everything we'll get is gravy. I will say, Jaren Jackson Jr. without Marc Gasol on the floor, here are the numbers. 92 points per 100 possessions, 108 allowed. So they're getting smoked in those numbers. And where they're winning is when they play small, when it's Gasol plus all their – Gasol plus Conley plus three wings, or Mack and two wings. I don't think that's an indictment on Jaren Jackson Jr.
He's 19. He just turned 19.
Fit wonderfully with Gasol. I mean, defensively, he just plays at his own speed, man. He's not going to go for your pump fakes. He's going to stay in front of you. He's going to use his arms. He doesn't get nervous. He's got a good, as Quinn Snyder once told me of Trey Lyles, actually, he has a good nervous system. Just has a nice feel for the game.
Yeah.
Pick one more team. Let's do one more team real fast before I get out of here.
Well, yeah, let's just go to Utah. We kind of briefly hit on them, but what's going on in Utah? Is it Donovan Mitchell, the whole rookies? I know Bill James used to call it the plexiglass principle, which is essentially that rookies don't have a sophomore slump. It's just that we're overrating their rookie season, and they were basically best case scenario of their rookie year, and they're going to regress to the mean. We're seeing that with Jason Tatum and Donovan Mitchell, where that rookie season, we're expecting them to double that. It is not linear. Yeah. There is a sophomore slump, not because they're worse, but because they're going to regress to the mean, and they were overachieving that rookie year, and we were expecting them to blow everyone's minds again.
And by the way, it doesn't mean that Donovan Mitchell is not a 24-year-old all-star in 2 years. Like, it doesn't mean that.
No, it just means that like a plexiglass bending, it's going to bend towards the middle again. And so the 35-point game with I think he took 31 shots with zero assists the other night. And he took 31 shots. Tim McMahon did a great story on this. Bam McMahon, did a story, 31 shots, zero assists. The last guy to do that was like Carmelo Anthony. And then I was like, oh no. Like, wait, is Donovan – I thought he was Dwayne Wade, but is he just like a shorter Carmelo Anthony? Not that Carmelo – he's a Hall of Famer, but I was thinking to myself, did we get that comp wrong with that Donovan Mitchell is the next Dwayne Wade, and now is he more like Carmelo Anthony or just a high-volume shooter?
Are you excited to see Carmelo Anthony play in China? You know,
it's happening.
I don't know. I just don't know who's signing Carmelo Anthony. I did look up. I heard someone with the Celtics. We were talking about Al Jefferson. We're like, I wonder how Al Jefferson's doing in China. I bet he's getting buckets. He's only scoring like 15 a game in 22 what? Minutes. I want Al Jefferson to go over there and score like 50.
Jort's averaged like 50 over there.
Al's. I don't know what he's doing over there. Mitchell is shooting 29% from three. Rubio, though, he hit a bunch last night, has shot horribly. Here's the numbers that are interesting to me. They've been bad on defense, which no one expected. They're like 18th in defense or something. And with Gobert on the floor, they're allowing 104 points per 100 possessions.
Has which, to be better.
Which would rank, I got too many tabs. It would rank fifth. So that's good. But when they've really been rolling,
is it like 90?
The Gobert on the floor is first by a mile. And teams are shooting 59% at the rim with Gobert around, which is like average to maybe slightly below average for a big man. And like when so I don't know what any of that means. I just know that something, and even like the Gobert no favors lineup, the small ball lineup with Crowder or whoever at the four.
Yeah.
By the way, they're one of the only teams where their most played lineup is not their starting lineup. They've played the Crowder at the 4-1 more.
The anti-Thibodeau, yeah.
Even those Gobert no favors lineups the last week or so have regressed on defense. Like something just, I'm not pointing a finger at Rudy because Rudy's really good. I'm just going to watch more carefully. Like, is he maybe not, as dominant? Is he not moving he's been dunking everything. So it's hard to believe he's not moving around that well. Like, is the perimeter defense worse? I think that's part of it. Something isn't quite locked in there.
Yeah. What about Favors to Washington?
Well, Favors on that non-guaranteed deal is one of the sneaky trade chips in the league. And, you know, they just, as an organization, they just haven't been able to, I think it represents that they just haven't been able to decide. Can we really win big playing those two guys together? And the answer goes yes, no. And now, right now, they think, I think just judging by the minutes distribution, it's no.
What's his cap number? Like, what's his salary this
16.9, I believe.
Is there an Otto Porter trade there?
Could be. They have a lot of wings already. Not to say that they couldn't use an upgrade, but like even Alec Burks has given them okay minutes until the last week or so.
That's interesting. Yeah. Utah, that was a surprise. They're not better. Offense. I remember Waz on our podcast was just saying they're never going to score. They're never in the playoffs. They're never going to score. And then Donovan Mitchell just lit up everybody in the playoffs. But they got to get better defensively. If you're right, we should watch the Jazz more just to figure out what's going on with Rudy, whether it's him or if it's something else.
I'm going to watch. That's the next Jazz game I watch. That's going to be where my eye just like, okay. Cause I was super wrong about Memphis and I was super right about the Jazz. I was skeptical that the Jazz would make this leap that everyone thought. Now I didn't see this coming where they're under 500, but the skepticism was largely based on like, I just don't believe their offense was as good as it was when they finished the season 29-6. Like they look like a average to 12th or 11th best offense. So I watched them skewing toward that.
And they're healthy.
Yeah. Assuming the defense will be what it is. And now I have to flip. All right. We've got to go. You have an actual job. I have to go to the Charlotte Hornets practice. Tom Habershaw, it's wonderful to see you. I'm thrilled for your success. I'm not thrilled that you have to be away from your family so much, jet setting around to all these NBC markets. But every time I see you on television, normally I fast forward everything that's not a game. I stop and I watch. I'm like, there's my guy, Tom Habershaw, looking nice in a suit and tie, doing his thing.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And I appreciate you having me on the Low Post podcast in a hotel room. It's the only way to do it.
Just like old times. Yes. Just like old times in Cleveland with the Fast and the Furious filming like below our hotel.
And the midges just glossing your window.
Boy, we're not going to see Cleveland again for a long time. Not for a long time. You know, it's just, I'll miss Cleveland. One of my favorite restaurants that someone in their front office introduced me to four finals ago. And, I would take NBA people there a lot because I liked it. The food was great. That last night before game four, they started giving out free drinks. Just like, we're not going to see you guys again for a long time.
That's sad.
Anyway, Tom, thank you, sir. Look for all Tom's stuff at NBC Sports and it's a pleasure seeing you.
And Griff is on my debut. David Griffin is on my debut podcast, which is called The Haberstroh Show on NBCSports.com.
I saw you tease that. Very good. All right, Tom. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Zach.
The Low Post is presented by Goodyear. Discover the possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.